Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
That is just a fact of life.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history, Pedro Fernandez.
Woo, it's going to be good.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar sports byline studios in the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide in WBC Boxing TV. Often imitated but never duplicated, but I got to turn on the microphone first, and I didn't that time. Bottom line is, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to the longest running fight show in history. Of course, 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Often imitated but never duplicated. For the next 2 hours, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and like a plethora of other internet platforms. Bottom line is, we're talking boxing and MMA. Mostly boxing. We've got open phone lines all around the planet. If you'd like to join us, you can. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. You can text us here in the studio, 415-275-1613. The text line, once again, 415-275-1613. Of course, we're coming to you live on Twitch.tv. Check out the Sports Byline USA channel. Live video as we stream for the next 2 hours. Coming to you live from the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, we'll be talking about the draw last night for the undisputed 154-pound championship. Brian Castano and, of course, only one of the Charlos, Jermell Charlo was in action last night. Of course, it was a draw. Jermell won the last three rounds. What does that tell you? The other man wasn't prepared to go the 12-round distance. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
I hope that you understand that one single person, not one single committee can do anything for boxing. It is absolutely necessary that we all get together. We work together. We respect each other. We like and love each other.
The one, the only, Don Jose Sulaiman, may he rest in peace. Of course, the founder of the WBC World Boxing Council. One of our sponsors here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Last night, the WBC, the WBA, the WBO, the IBA, every champion in the world, every sanctioning body you can imagine was in action last night as far as 154 pounds was concerned. Of course, the majority of those belts is held by Jermell Charlo. Of course, Jermell Charlo, one of the Charlo brothers, a twin. Of course, his brother's the undefeated 160-pound champion, thought to be the better of the two, or Jermell is thought to be the lesser of the two. Anyway, the bottom line is, last night he went to a spirited 12-round draw. It was a great fight for boxing, and both guys had their moments, no doubt about that. Of course, Charlo winning the last three rounds on all three of the judges' scorecards sort of sealed the fate as far as the draw was concerned, because had he not done that, he'd have lost. So that's how close the fight was. Let me talk about the scores. Of course, they were like one judge had it 117-111. What was Nelson Vasquez thinking? 117-111. That means he gave Brian Castano only three rounds. Yikes. That was a bit of a stretch. Anyway, so Castano's now 17-0, still undefeated. The two draws, 12 KOs. Mr. A, you gotta give him some props. He's like still once beaten, 34-1-1, 18 KOs, and still the champion as far as Charlo's concerned. But, you know, how can I put this? 114-113 for Castano, 114-114 the other way draw, and then 117-111 for, Charlo by Mr. Vasquez. That scores a bit of an, how can I put this? I don't want to rip the judge, but I will. Bottom line is, that's like an indictment of your ability to score a fight. If you thought that young man only won three rounds of that fight last night, you should turn in your scorecard right now and never ever judge a fight again professionally, or go back to the Golden Gloves. Take that back. that score wasn't good enough for the Golden Gloves, because if you screwed up over 12 rounds, God knows you screw up over 3 rounds. Anyway, bottom line is, not all that bad of a fight last night, 154 pounds. Of course, that was on Showtime. The co-feature, Raleigh Romero. My buddy Raleigh. We'll get to him a little bit later. But Raleigh Romero, of course, he roughed up Ryan Garcia in the gym about 6 or 8 months, think about it, about a year ago. Of course, Ryan Garcia in action with anxiety issues, talking about making a comeback maybe before the end of the year. We'll see if that happens. Anyway, Raleigh Romero pounded on a guy named Anthony Yidgett, who came in like 5 pounds overweight. Yidgett now 24-2 with 18 KOs. Bottom line is, he couldn't lick a stamp if you wet his tongue. He just couldn't. And he got pounded on like a Congo drum for like 7 rounds. Raleigh just kept pounding and pounding and pounding. Finally stopped. The fight was stopped at 154, round number 7. Romero now 14-0. Of course, Romero now next up for Gervonta Davis. Gervonta Davis holds a WBA belt at 135 pounds, as does Raleigh Romero. Raleigh's the interim champion. Davis is the real champion, supposedly. So bottom line is, these guys are going to hook it up. And guess what? Raleigh's being fed to the Lions by Floyd Mayweather. I mean, hey, you know, he's not going to be the A side of any record. I just don't think Raleigh Romero is going to be the A side of any record. So might as well get what you can, while you can, get the payday against Davis, and of course, and that'll probably be it. From that point forward, I think he'll be an opponent. This is the way I think Raleigh Romero, although he's a rough guy, I don't see him as I just don't see him as top five guy. I really don't. I may be wrong, but of course he is famous for lumping up Ryan Garcia. Outside of that, I don't know. But as far as Brian Castano is concerned last night, and I got a text here last night, I am being fair enough, okay? The guy didn't win the last 3 rounds. If you lose the last, that's 25% of the fight. If you lose the last 25% of the fight, how can you even expect to win a close fight? How can you do that? You can't do it. Let's do the math. It's 12. 12 rounds. That's all it is. You win the majority of 12 rounds. Guess what? 7-5, 8-4, 9-3, 10-2, 11-1. You won the fight. What is 6-6? It's a draw. 5-5-1. It's a 5-5-2. It's a draw. Bottom line is, last night's fight was a spirited draw over 12 rounds, and I think the fact that they're going to probably have to do it again, that's going to rock and roll as far as boxing serves, because it will build up a little anticipation. This wasn't a bad fight. It wasn't. I mean, Castano fought square. He fought amateurish. I mean, when you watch guys fight on TV and you know how to fight a little bit, you sort of cringe when they commit mistakes that you say to yourself, just correcting that one thing could probably win this fight. And he fought a little bit more of an angle instead of square like that, because when he got close, I tell you one thing, he threw a good left hook to the body. It's one of the best left hooks to the body we've seen in a long time. And, of course, that's a trademark of Mexican boxers. That's a trademark of boxing. In fact, Sugar Ray Leonard used to throw one of the meanest left hooks to the body you ever saw in your life, and that's a black fighter. So it's not restricted to Mexican fighters south of the border. But last night, that young man was looking good, no doubt about it. Brian Castano will live to fight another day. He's still undefeated, 17-0, as I said, a couple of draws now, 12 KOs. At the end of the night, it was a good night for boxing. I really think it was. Raleigh Romero, Raleigh is what he is. And people say to me, I'm too kind to Raleigh Romero. Yeah, right. Bottom line is, Raleigh is a piece of work, and we'll see what happens as far as his future is concerned, because he's going to hook up with Gervonta Davis, and that's sort of like, as I said, a death sentence. No doubt about it, a death sentence. Speaking of upcoming fights, of course, we've got the big fight coming up with Errol Spence, of course, and Manny Pacquiao, and more people are starting to pick Manny Pacquiao now. At first, it was just my guys, Hector Martinez and Socrates Palmer, boxing's PhD, saying that Manny's got a chance. I'm saying, you know, Manny's 42 years old. Man, 42 years old, 42-year-old little guy fighting a guy that's 31 years old, around 30 years old, and that's at his regular size and at his peak. I mean, supposedly at his physical and mental peak as Errol Spence. But then again, Errol Spence was tossed out of a car about a year and a half ago at 105 miles per hour. Had some he had a concussion. Because there's no doubt about it, there was blood in his eyes, so you wouldn't have that blood in your eyes if you didn't have some type of concussion. So there was some neurological damage done to Errol Spence. Now, is he 100%? Who knows? But I got news here. If I was fighting him, I'd try to wake him up to all kinds of stuff. Do some dirty stuff to him, step on his feet, hit him with elbows. I'd throw all kinds of stuff at him and just like try to discombobulate him, make him thinking, try to get him to panic. But knowing Errol Spence with his vast amateur background and the fact that he's a solid fighter as a pro, would probably lick me like a stamp, no doubt about that. But Manny Pacquiao is a different story. I mean, he lost a couple fights along the way, but for the most part, he's won fights that I didn't think he could win. I mean, I thought Miguel Cotto was going to beat him, and I remember talking to Cotto in Cartagena, Colombia. We're down in Colombia for some convention one year. This was about 8 or 10 years ago now. maybe not that long, 2015, 2013, somewhere around there. Anyway, I asked him, how did you get knocked out by a guy so small? See, I just couldn't imagine it. I couldn't imagine a guy, a featherweight or like a bantamweight knocking me out as a 140-pounder. I just couldn't imagine it. And that's how big of a size advantage, that natural size advantage that Miguel Cotto had over Manny Pacquiao. So I said to him, how did that happen? He said, I don't know. I've never been hit that hard in my life. And I've been hit by guys at 165, 170 pounds in the gym. He goes, I've never been hit that hard. And I was, yeah, but in the gym it's big gloves. He goes, no, I've never been hit that hard ever in my life. Manny Pacquiao, a hell of a puncher, no, regardless of the weight. But remember, at 107, 112 pounds, he was a skinny kid, couldn't punch much, went up to 122, beat the recently departed Ledlow LaBaba, of course, for the IBF title. And from that point forward, beat Marco Antonio Barrera, had the trilogy with Eric Morales. I mean, he did all kinds of stuff, moved up to 140 pounds, 147 pounds, beat up Oscar De La Hoya, made Oscar retire, and now Oscar's going to come back and fight an MMA fighter named Vitor Belfort. Why not fight me, Oscar? Make me a couple of bucks. Come back and fight me because I've got as much chance or more than Vitor Belfort. So why don't you do that? Bottom line is, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, you're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. Hour number two, we'll bring in a young man that will surprise everybody. He's a current United States featherweight champion. That's all I'm going to tell you at this point in time. But he's from the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. And, of course, he is handled by the incomparable, the man himself, Eddie Primetime Crofton, B Street Boxing in San Mateo, California. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, sponsored by the World Boxing Council. Check it out, WBCBoxing.com. That's their interactive website. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The cops ain't likely to catch up with us, not tonight. So we can all be quiet and peaceable and have a few beers together and listen to the music. And not make any wrong moves.
Okay, I played the Law and Order theme going out to the last break and forgot to hit you up on it. But the bottom line is I'm playing the Law and Order thing right now because Manny Pacquiao's in trouble. He is. He's messing around with the Filipino president. The guy's name is Duwalamy. He's a real killer. I'm telling you, he like drops people out of airplanes for suspected drug use. In other words, he, yikes. I'm not going to go there. Anyway, I bring you back to August 21st, 1983. Ninoy Aquino, he was like a stud here in San Francisco in the Filipino community and all throughout the United States, but he was sort of like the president in exile, the people's president in exile. Anyway, I think he was living in Colma for a while and then in L.A., but the bottom line is he decided he was going to return to the Philippines and run for the presidency against then-president Ferdinand Marcos. Now, Marcos was a rough dude. Marcos was a gangster, much like Duwalamy to an extent. Of course, he's the guy that brought Ali Frazier III, the Thrill of Manila, to Manila, and of course that bankrupt base almost bankrupt the country. But August 21st, 1983, Ninoy Aquino, the husband of the future president, Corazon Aquino, which we'll get to a little bit later. Anyway, he steps off a plane at the Ninoy Aquino International Airport. He stepped off the plane. He had 1 foot on the ground. 1 foot, not 2 foot, 1 feet, not 2 feet. 1 foot on the ground, and somebody blew him his head off, shot him, just killed him right there, snuck up, boom, he was dead. Like, wow, right then and there. And, of course, President Ferdinand Marcos had that done. I mean, there was no doubt about it. I mean, everybody knew it, and basically the gunmen later alluded to the fact that they were government officials, things like that. They were catered to by the government. Anyway, the bottom line is he was snuffed out. And the reason why he was snuffed out is that he opposed a Filipino president. Now we have Manny Pacquiao. Probably the most popular figure in Filipino history. Well, I kid you not. I mean, I can't think of anybody more popular ever, without a doubt, okay? So now he's a senator. Having been a congressman, he's a senator, not in his native country, not in his native city. Yeah, I think he ran for senator in his wife's province or something like that. But the bottom line is, he is a senator, and that's the upper echelon of the government in the Philippines. Of course, just like the United States, there's the Congress is the Senate, and the next up is the president. So obviously, he's favored to beat Duwalamy if they were to go at each other as far as next year is concerned. Now, I don't know if there's term limitations going on as far as the Philippines are concerned, but I couldn't imagine any term limitations being involved with this guy Duwalamy because he's a stone-cold killer, dropping dope fiends. Now, listen, there's a lot of dope fiends in San Francisco. I've seen them coming in this morning. I see guys shooting up here and there, you know, guys living in shopping carts, all that kind of good stuff, all because of dope, okay? But in the Philippines, They don't put up with that crap. This guy, Duwamish, drops you out of airplanes. Now, if that doesn't scare the snot out of you, if you're doing dope, and if that doesn't scare the snot out of you and want to make you go straight, I don't think anything will. Because that would definitely want to make us. What happens? If I get caught, what? You're going to drop me out of an airplane? Yeah, I don't think I'll be getting high. I'm not in public anyway. I wouldn't be putting myself at risk. Anyway, bottom line is, this guy's a killer. He's killed all kinds of people, and Manny Pacquiao has put himself on a short list to be killed. Okay? And if he keeps it up, if he keeps popping off, of course, the feud is intensified. Of course, they were going at it back and forth. When Manny was in the Philippines, they said, you know, you're a Filipino senator, said the president, you shouldn't be leaving to go do this fight, blah, 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 kind of good stuff. You know, he's jealous of the fact that Pac-Man is the Pac-Man. I mean, Manny Pacquiao is one of the nicest guys you've ever seen in your life. Now, I don't hate to use one of Donald Trump's cliches or anything like that, but he could shoot somebody in the middle of Manila and nobody would say anything about it. I mean, he's like a god. He's a wonderful man. He's bought housing for the poor. I mean, he's fed the homeless. You name it. This guy's done a whole lot. And this is leading up to his running for the presidency next year. I think it's it's not a liberal party, it's a conservative party. He's going to run for the head as the presidential candidate of the conservative party. Of course, now him and Duwamish were like allies. They were buddies for a while. I don't know how you can be buddies with a guy that throws people out of airplanes when you're a compassionate man like Manny Pacquiao. But he was, because they were political allies to an extent. But now, Duwamish is basically beating the death drum on Manny Pacquiao. I mean, Manny messes around anymore, he's going to be toast. I kid you not. And if you think I'm kidding, ask Nino Aquino. He can't. He's dead. 1983, they killed him on the tarmac, of course, in Manila. And his wife, of course, the future president of the Philippines, Corazon Aquino, who I had some interaction with when I was a policeman here in San Francisco. We were part of her private detail. She appeared at John Sweat School. I remember that was one of the places she appeared at in the Western Edition. And we took her to different spots throughout the city. And, of course, she did spend some time with the Filipino community, which was, you know, her prop. She's a Filipino president at that point in time. But she was a really nice lady. I remember at the end of the detail, we were at the St. Francis Hotel. We were in there. They said, they all brought us all together. And St. Francis was like, well, what do you want us? Why do we have to come back? Just let us go home. You want to go home? Like at that overtime car for another 2 hours. You want to get the other 2 hours, you know, on the city and go home, right? Did I just submit that? Yes, I did. Anyway, but the bottom line is, I said, you know, we got to meet up at the St. Francis Hotel. Usually after these gigs, we sort of had like an extra hour and a half. And what you did was you signed a card saying that you would be off for the next 2 hours. So in case you did anything stupid, like getting drunk or something like that, you officially signed off. But if you didn't do anything stupid and drunk, they tore up the card next morning. You got paid the overtime. Hey, SFPD, what can I say? Anyway, bottom line is I got my money that night and I showed up at the St. Francis Hotel. And I've, you know, we watched this lady for the most of the day, like we've traveled around the city with her, and it was nothing out of the unusual, nothing whatsoever at all. I mean, it's just a VIP, I thought, president of the Philippines. All right, more power to her. So at the end of the night, she came downstairs. We were at the St. Francis Hotel. She came downstairs and wished us all thanks and went by and shook everybody's hand, this and that. You know, and most VIPs, when we did the VIP thing with the SFPD, you know, they could give a spit about you or give a snot about you. They just didn't. But that lady showed class. She came down and she took care of everybody as far as handshakes were concerned. In fact, she had some little type of gift. I can't remember what it was. Something was wrapped in a little ribbon and this and that. But I can't remember exactly what it was because I left mine in the hotel that night. We were ripping and running that night. You know, when you're young, things happen real quick. In other words, you're on a schedule. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA, of course. Upcoming fights. Let's talk about upcoming fights. Of course, David Benavidez, the unbeaten lad from Central California by way of Phoenix, I believe, of course. He's undefeated, former WBC super middleweight champion, taking on Jose Urzikatai. That's going to go down. God, did I spell that? Urzikatai? Anyway, bottom line is that's going to go down August 28th. But over the last month and a half, some of the results that I've been impressed with, I mean, you know, you have to look at some boxing, you have to look at some fights, say yourself, was I impressed with that result? Was I impressed with this one? You know, Charlo and Castano last night, a little bit impressed. Lyndon Arthur last week, I was impressed. Gilberto Ramirez, of course, Zerto, they call him the former cruiserweight champion, now dropping down to 175 pounds. Props to him. He lost 25 pounds and went from a 200-pound champion down to a 175-pound champion. Will he be able to make himself a star at 175? I just don't know if he's a star type of capability. I don't know if he has all the, I mean, he's a good fighter and he's undefeated in 42 fights, but I wouldn't put him like, wouldn't call him the next Sugar Ray Robinson or anything like that. Tim Zhu was a winner a fortnight ago against Steve Spark. Steve Spark was a last minute replacement, had a decent record, but Tim Zhu, of course, the son of Kostya Zhu, the former world junior welterweight champion. Now his son's campaigning at 154. Is the real deal? I don't know. Nothing like his father. Chris Colbert was a winner a couple weeks ago. Of course, he beat the tugboat. But the guy that I think stands out in the last month, as far as all of the wins are concerned, wasn't Vasyl Lomachenko. No, he comes in number two. Of course, that whooping he put on Miyoshi Nakatani was like, yikes. Hector said he made Nakatani look like a bum. I mean, he didn't mean that in a negative sense. He just said, he just took away everything that Nakatani had. I mean, usually Lomachenko comes out there and just chips you away. He just came out and beat that, you know what, from the get-go. It's like, bang! I mean, I'm not giving you anything. I mean, he made a statement that night. No doubt about it to Vasyl Lomachenko. But the guy I thought that made the biggest statement in the last month and a half, maybe the last six to eight weeks, has been David Morrell. He's got a portion of the WBA super middleweight title. He's only got five fights. He's 5-0 with like four knockouts. And he's went 12, I think he went four rounds, eight rounds, 10 rounds, 12 rounds, and now 12 rounds again. So the bottom line is, in five fights, he's really, accelerated as far as going to the upper echelon of 168 pounds. Now this is a former Cuban champion. He was an Olympian. He did this. He did that. I mean, he did all kinds of stuff. Was an amateur stud. But at five fights now, he's going 12 rounds. What does that say a lot about him? Or does that say less about the fighters that have been schooled and had to go 12 rounds by, you know, working to get it and this kind of stuff? And this guy, a former amateur fighter, just rocking and rolling. Anyway, David Morrell, I think he could be the future at 168. Of course, when I think about the future, because the present right now is Canelo Alvarez. No doubt about that. The once-beaten lad from Mexico, of course, that one loss and the one draw. To the one loss to Mayweather, and he had one draw besides that. But the bottom line is, he is the real deal. Pound for pound, Canelo is the deal. I mean, who else? 168, you got Mr. Benavidez. Of course, he looks good. As far as David Morrell, he looks good. 168, a lot of names at 168. But the guy that's going to stand out at 168 right now is Canelo Alvarez, okay? As far as the future is concerned, lots and lots of names at 168, including David Morrell. 175, I'm not a big fan of 175 division right now. Right now, I'm looking at the heavyweights. And the reason why I'm looking at the heavyweights is they're supposed to fight each other. They're talking all this smack. Of course, we've got the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, undefeated world linear champion, who pulled a punk-ass move about a week and a half ago when he canceled that fight with Deontay Wilder because some people in his camp had COVID. He didn't have COVID. Now I'll find out he didn't have COVID. Some people in his camp had COVID. Instead of telling those people in the camp to get the deck out of here, duck out of here with, you know, duck with a D. Instead of telling them to get the duck out of here, they didn't. They ended up postponing the fight. It cost a lot of people a lot of money, folks. And this isn't the first time this fight's been put off. So for the second time, Tyson Fury is sort of indicating maybe that he doesn't want to fight Deontay Wilder. And I don't understand that because, well, I do, because Wilder can punch. He's afraid that, you know, one punch might take away that golden jackpot. Of course, they talk about the big payday with Anthony Joshua. But the bottom line is, if you whooped on a dude like if I whooped on a dude like he whooped on Deontay Wilder, I just wouldn't be worried about it, especially after that last fight. I mean, the first fight went 12 rounds. You got knocked down two times. Outside of the two times you were knocked down, you were probably in control of the 99.9% of the entire fight. The second fight, you controlled the entire fight. I mean, you should have been arrested for domestic violence. If you and Deontay Wilder were gay and hooked up in a relationship, the cops would have took you to jail that night, Tyson Fury. I mean, Tyson Fury beat on him like a drum. Oh, God, he just did. And, of course, Wilder afterwards, you know, my helmet was heavy, my legs were bad, my girl was giving me problems. I mean, he had 1,001 excuses. Bottom line is, at the end of the day, I don't think he's as big a risk as Tyson Fury and those guys think. So, what can I say? But I'm not the one gambling with those millions and millions of dollars. And we're probably talking $150 million. If he were to lose to Deontay Wilder, he would probably lose out on $150 million in future earnings as far as his fight with Anthony Joshua is concerned. That is amazing money. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA. We'll cover the world of MMA after the break to an extent. Hour number two, of course, we'll bring in an amateur star, the United States current featherweight champion. I'll get to that and more on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open phone lines around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free no-commitment text line, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. This is WBC Boxing TV and Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Like we stop at the top of the hill.
Come on over here, man. He been here before. He done broke records here before. He's a legend of the sports. And it'd be my honor to fight him next.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council. the WBC.
Just under 90 seconds remains in the fourth round. He used that arm to try to take away the base. Oh, look at the kicks. That's old school Hicks and Gracie style. Oh, he's got the choke.
Stuck it in.
Penn looking to choke out Florian. BJ Penn looking to remain the champion. It is all over. BJ Penn has defeated Teddy Florian.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez. Brought to you by the WBC. The World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
Some old Tower of Power, of course, Back to Oakland. That was the album of 1974. That's when I met my buddy on lead singer, the lead singer on that song. I'm talking about Lenny Williams. Of course, we're still friends. So many years later, he's just a class act. I hope to have him on the show in the near future. Lenny Williams is one of the... You know, I met a lot of people in music and the entertainment industry as a whole. But the bottom line is, you know, few people have the class, the integrity, and the honesty that Lenny Williams has. So we're going to say Lenny and his wife, Debbie, may they could continue success and good luck to them both. No doubt about that. Let's talk about the world of mixed martial arts. The USC, of course, rocking and rolling last night. In the main event, a guy by the name of Islam, we'll just leave it at that. Islam's got a good first name. His last name is like Michael Hatchek. Anyway, the bottom line is he beat Thiago Moses, submission rear naked choke. That was in the fourth round, 2 minutes and 38 seconds. And, of course, the USC main events or the title fights, they go 5 5-minute rounds. Anything other than title fights or a main event or eliminator or title eliminator would go 3 rounds, make it 5 minutes each round. Misha Tate, the former champion, of course, that was a girl that took care of Holly Holm. Remember that? Holly Holm, of course, was the girl that beat Ronda Rousey. She sort of upset the entire world of mixed martial arts. She beat Ronda down under. She beat Ronda. Anyway. Bottom line is Holly Holm decided she was going to not take the rematch with Ronda Rousey and wait for that. She instead was going to take on Misha Tate because her promoter came on this show talking about Lenny Frasquez, her manager and her promoter. He came under talking all kinds of spit that he was going to tell Dana White where to shove it and all that kind of stuff and blah, 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 blah. The bottom line is he fought Misha Tate and he lost. He destroyed the career of Holly Holm. Since that point, Holly Holm really has been sort of an asterisk in the world of mixed martial arts. Yeah, she's won a few fights. In fact, she's lost a fight or two here and there. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, she will never hit the peak she was at, the crescendo she was at when she beat Ronda Rousey. Has she been on a continued role? Has she fought Ronda and waited for the rematch? She was going to beat Ronda in the rematch, no doubt about that. I mean, Ronda can't do anything other than that one thing, the arm bar and the judo. If she can't do that to you, it's over. So if you can smack up Ronda, or you can out maneuver her on the ground, do some Brazilian jiu-jitsu, whatever, you're going to beat Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey was a trick, one-trick pony, no doubt about that. But Misha Tate was the winner last night of a young lady by the name of Marianne Renault. That was a TKO in the third round, 53 in. As far as the rest of the names on the card was concerned, as I told you, the UFC is hurting for names. They just don't have the names anymore. I mean, Khabib, the world lightweight champion, sort of like retired because Cuddy wouldn't fight him. Nobody wanted to fight him in this and that. You know, of course, Dustin Poirier, he destroyed Dustin Poirier in the blink of an eye. There was no doubt about that. And speaking of Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor, they're probably going to go a fourth time, but it won't happen if it does happen until 2022 at the very least. And the reason why I say that is, that clean of a break, as far as his ankle was concerned, Conor McGregor's ankle, we'll get to that in a little bit, but guys don't heal from that in 6 months. So I'm looking at the rest of the card here, and I don't see anybody that jumps out at me. I really don't. I'm looking at names. There's no names out there that jump out. What am I trying to tell you that is that they're hurting for athletes. They're like, they made $290 million last year, the UFC did. They grossed $290 million. Of course, they only give, believe me, between 8, and now they're starting to say they give 18% to the fighters. I've been told via lawsuits and papers that I've seen as far as this suit against Zuffa Sports, and Zuffa Sports, of course, was a company that owned the UFC before it was sold to that conglomerate about a year and a half ago for $4.2 billion, which is $4,200 million. That's a lot of money, okay? But before it was sold, it was being sued. It's being sued right now. There are athletes suing the UFC. They decided there was some type of slave plantation and Dana was a pimp and that kind of stuff. I mean, Dana White. And I would never say that Dana White was a pimp. I would say that he was shady, and that's just my opinion. I didn't like the way he did things. I don't like Dana White's approach to business. Of course, he does with things his way, and he's sort of like he's a bit of a zealot. And, of course, the guy that I met when he came out here from East Boston, he was running a boxing program in East Boston until Whitey Bulger. Remember Whitey Bulger? He was that gangster that hid out in California. He was hiding out about about 3 or 4 miles from Larry Merchant's house down there in Santa Monica. He was hiding out in Santa Monica in this building, and Larry Merchant knew a couple of the tenants in the building where he was living, Whitey Bulger. But Whitey Bulger had like 300 grand stuffed in the wall, and of course he was hiding out, for, I think he was hid out for 5 or 7 years. Anyway, bottom line is, he was like number one on the 10 most wanted list, but they got him. They got him down there in Southern California, you know about that. And Whitey Bulger was a guy that sort of created the UFC. Why do I say that? Because Whitey Bulger told Dana, said, listen, man, you're going to have to start paying me some protection for your gym. Dana said, huh? He goes, yeah, you have to give me $2,500 a month. He says, $2,500 a month? He goes, I can't give you $2,500 a month. I can give you $250 a month if I could. I'm not making any money. So Dana says, Dana refuses to pay him. So they said, listen, Dana, you don't pay us, things are going to start to happen to you. And then things started to happen around the gym. You know, little accidents here and there, little things started to happen. And Dana got hip to it. So Dana got out of town, got on a plane, a one-way ticket to Las Vegas, hooked up with the Fertitta brothers, Frank and Lorenzo Fertitta. Of course, those guys own the station casinos, a big neighbor. It was a neighborhood network of casinos there in Las Vegas, not really on the strip, off strip, and in different parts of town. But the bottom line is they banked the UFC. Of course, they banked it to the point of, I think they were in the hole like $35 million. And they said, you know, we want to sell. They tried to sell it. Nobody wanted to buy it. They said, oh, we're stuck with it. So they held on to it. Now they sold it for $4.2 billion. $4.2 billion, $4,200 million, but yet they can only give the fighters 8 to 10% of the money. In other words, of the $290 million that came in, suppose it was $300 million. Okay, let's break down. I'll make it more simpler than that. Suppose $100 million. Of the $100 million the UFC brought in, only 10% went to the fighters. That's right. The guys getting their ass kicked out there. The women, of course, getting their faces rearranged. Okay, out there, they're only getting 8 to 10% of the money. Think about that. 8 to 10% of the money. I think the NFL's got some type of player agreement with their union. Of course, they get like 50%. But these guys are getting 8 to 10% of the money. Of course, the UFC is a privately held company. They can get away with that stuff. And at the end of the day, it's pimping. It's pimping Dana style. And I'm not down with it whatsoever. And people say to me, you know, you rail on Dana White week after week after week after week. Well, you know, this is the way it is. I think he's a slime ball, and this is my opinion, okay? And I can say that. I have to say it's just my opinion. It's not the network's opinion. It's my opinion. I've had personal interactions with him. Of course, we did a couple of deals as far as advertising was concerned back in the day when UFC, I think it was UFC 35 or something like that. Of course, now at UFC 265 upcoming, so that's how long ago my Dana and I were going back together. But the bottom line is I think he's been a piece of work, and he's not my favorite guy. And at the end of the day, I think the UFC would be better off. The entire world of mixed martial arts might be better off without Dana White. I'll get to that in a future episode of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open phone lines around the planet, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. You can text us here in the studio at 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Well, next up, as far as the UFC is concerned, July 24th on ESPN, of course, ESPN Plus as well if you got the app. And the app's pretty good. It's for $5 a month. I think $5.99. I get it. I get to watch a lot of boxing, and you get to watch all the ESPN classes, like 30 years on this, 30 years on Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson, and all those 30 on 30 shows, all that kind of stuff. All that stuff is available with the ESPN Plus app. So millions of things to watch on the ESPN Plus app. I'm not getting any money to plug that, but I think it's a good app, no doubt about it. Anyway, the main event, this card on ESPN next week, Corey Sandhagen, going to be in the main event against TJ Dillashaw. Remember TJ? We had him on the show before when he was champion. Of course, back when he was the bantamweight champion, and he looked like he was a stud, but as we turned out, he turned out to be a cheat. Yeah, he got caught taking drugs, performance-enhancing drugs, steroids. That's right. When he was going to fight the 125-pound champion, he decided he was going to come down, and he got to 128 pounds, and he couldn't lose any more weight. So he took steroids to lose 3 pounds. You believe that one? No, I don't believe it either. Anyway, bottom line is TJ Dillashaw is a cheat. He's been off, I think it was a year or 2 years. I think it was 2 years originally, and I think they sort of modified the suspension and made it a year or something like that because, you know, he's got some little pop there. Anyway, TJ Dillashaw and Corey Sandhagen in the bantamweight main event next week, July 24th on ESPN from Enterprise, Nevada, UFC Apex Center. I'm calling that Enterprise, Nevada. We call it the ghetto of Las Vegas. Anyway, also on the card, Aspen Ladd taking on Macy Chazon. That's a women's bantamweight, about 135 pounds. So the chicks, the males and the females, both represented at 135 pounds. Another 135-pound bout. It'll be Kyler Phillips taking on Roland Pava. Outside of that, I'm looking down the rest of the the lineup's concerned, it's like, you know, 15 fights here, right? How many big names do I cut? One name. Mickey Gall. What was he famous for? Didn't he beat CM Punk? That was it. Remember CM Punk, the guy from the WWE, decided he was going to go over to the world of mixed martial arts? And Dana said, okay, you can do it. Well, Mickey Gall was the first guy they lined up, and they thought he could possibly beat Mickey Gall. He couldn't. More power to CM Punk. I can't remember his real name right now, but more power to CM Punk. He did the real deal. I mean, he wasn't faking. There wasn't no more fake fights and that kind of good stuff. So I give him props for that. But for the ass kickings he took, and he was talking about doing it again, and he's like almost 40 years old, just forget it, man. No doubt about it. You made your mark as far as pro wrestling was concerned, and you made your mark as far as MMA is concerned. You were unbeaten. I take that back. You never want to fight in the world of mixed martial arts. Just leave it at that as far as the UFC is concerned. And the rest of that card, I say, outside of Mickey Gall, there is nobody on the card. As far as the rest of the year is concerned, I'm looking at the UFC card. I mean, there's nothing jumping out here. Volkanovski going to take on Brian Ortega, of course, UFC 268, 266. And then the reason that I bring up this fight is that Brian Ortega, of course, was a kid from L.A., East L.A. Beautiful kid. Had a beautiful face. I mean, probably still does. But I mean, he had these, he was better looking, I thought, than Oscar. I mean, he was more articulate than Oscar. He could speak better than Oscar, and Oscar was a good speaker. I'm talking about Oscar De La Hoya. Of course, him coming back, later in October to take on, or September? September 11th. 9-11, Oscar De La Hoya is going to fight on 9-11 against a guy that never had a boxing match before in Vitor Belfort. I hope Vitor licks him like, much like, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. got licked, of course, when he took on the Anderson Silva. It was a matter of size. Size matters in two things. Pornography and combat sports. And this is combat sports, no doubt about that. But Alexander Volkanovski against Brian Ortega for the World Featherweight Championship, of course, of the UFC or the UFC title. Bottom line is Volkanovski is a champion. Of course, he had that close fight with Max Holloway, the rematch. I thought Max won the rematch. I think 99.9% of everybody watching that fight thought that Max Holloway won the rematch. Dana White thought he won the rematch. And when Dana White sort of comes out and second guesses the judges, it's probably atrocious for him to do that. It would have to be really egregious for him to come out and do that. But anyway, he did it for that fight. Anyway, Ortega, once beaten, lad, fought the aforementioned Mr. Holloway. Of course, that fight was over in about a round and a half into it. And of course, these are five-minute rounds, right? And they let him take a beating for another two rounds. I mean, we're talking about a severe beating. I have never seen a beating dished out like that. Max Holloway is one of the best ass kickers in the entire world when it comes to using his elbows, his knees, his feet. I mean, his legs, everything. I mean, he just is the complete package. When he's kicking your ass, he's kicking your complete ass, okay? And he was killing Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega looked like a blood donor. Looked like somebody who was lined up they should have put a needle in his arm. He was losing that much blood, okay? But he was bleeding, and he couldn't compete, and the fight wasn't competitive, and Brian Ortega's people didn't stop the fight, and the referee didn't stop the fight, and the doctor didn't stop the fight. Nobody stopped the damn fight! Nobody stopped the fight! They just let him keep getting his ass whipped! I couldn't believe it. And I'm screaming at the TV. Thank God I stole that signal. I didn't give you a dime for that one, Dan. I think I stole that one on the internet. Or I take it back, somebody showed me that fight on the internet. But the bottom line is, you know, I'm screaming at the TV, stop, stop, stop the fight. They never stopped the fight. They let it go into the fourth round. It was the most severe one-sided ass kicking I've ever seen in my life, and I don't understand it in the UFC. I don't understand why once a guy's beaten, it's not over. Once a guy's beaten, why isn't it over? Once the fight is no longer competitive and the guy's about to get hurt, you let him get hurt to a certain extent, I guess, for entertainment value in the UFC, but you gotta stop it at some point in time. In the UFC, they just don't stop fights. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Only so much oil on the ground. Tower power.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 56, make that 57 minutes past the hour. Hour number one of two, live on Sports Byline, of course, live on Twitch.tv. And hour number two, we bring in a live guest, Steve Johnson. He's the current United States Featherweight champion. That's right. The featherweight champion of the United States will be in the house in just a few minutes here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Don't forget the WBC website, of course, WBCBoxing.com. It's got interactive. It's got stuff about diets, how to lose weight, how to get in shape. of course, all the fights, all the upcoming WBC fights, the results, that kind of good stuff. Of course, a lot of stuff there as far as interactive fans back and forth with the WBC. Check them out, WBCboxing.com. Of course, I didn't get to it in depth of this hour, but Conor McGregor, I will in hour number two. Of course, he's 3-4 since winning that big fight against Jose Aldo. Of course, it was like 2015, 2016, but yet he continues to make some money. Let me tell you this, some of the Conor McGregor pay-per-view numbers. 1.8, 1.2. Him and Mayweather did 4.3 million homes on pay-per-view. What were they watching? What were those fools watching? How were you one of the suckers that bought this thing? Were you? Were, I'm looking at you. Were you? I mean, come on. You would pay $100 to watch these two clowns fight. You got an old has-been and Floyd Mayweather, 48-0, 49-0 at the time. Oh, boy, boy. Okay. Taking on a guy that never boxed before or had maybe one or two amateur fights. And you take this seriously? And some of you actually bet on Conor McGregor to beat him? You actually did that? Anyway, if you got ripped off to that point, if you were one of the 4.3 million people that bought that fight, take that back. I was 4.3 million here in the U.S. 1 million people bought that in the U.K. at like 4 o'clock in the morning. So guess what? 4 o'clock in the morning, you had nothing better to do than spend $100 to watch Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor go 10 rounds in a boxing match. Get a life. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Hour number two, of course, we will bring you the champion. He'll be in the house. We'll talk about Stevie Johnson, of course, the United States featherweight champion. But looking back at these McGregor numbers, you know, he's a draw. I mean, without a doubt, he's a draw. But he's a drunk. He's just a drunk. He's an alcoholic. I mean, let's call it like it is. He is. He threw the hand truck through the window of that bus, isn't it? Has that been a black dude? Come on. You got to be kidding me. He'd be in the pen. If it had been me. Striped shirts, you know that, no doubt about that. What do they do with him? They find him and let him go. People suffered injuries, had glass in their eyes. But it was okay because it was Conor and he sells tickets. Bottom line is, Conor McGregor is a has-been, he's done. Stick a fork in him, he tried to get dry for like 4 or 5 weeks, tried to clean himself up as far as no booze was concerned. But guess what, at the end of the day, he's still a drunk. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Hour number two of forthcoming on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, of course, Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the World Boxing Council. Stay tuned for hour number two with Eddie Croft and Stevie Johnson in studio.